You're listening to Stateside. I'm April Baer. Over the past few months, we've talked to a number of restaurant owners about how the pandemic has affected their business. Many have been struggling with the financial curveball and the need to keep putting paychecks into staff pockets. Some are making dramatic changes to their brand and service model, switching from upscale offerings to comfort carryout food in order to get through. But we wanted to take a second look at what COVID has meant for white tablecloth restaurants, where food itself is maybe one piece of a multi-part overall experience. Joining us now to talk about the future of fine dining is Mark Kurlianchik, restaurant critic for the Detroit Free Press. Mark, welcome back to Stateside.
Thanks for having me, April.
Just so we're all on the same page, could you start out by explaining what you mean when we talk about fine dining?
Yeah, to me, fine dining has some old school connotations, white tablecloths, servers who are typically in wearing some kind of server's uniform, no jeans. I think our sort of idea of fine dining has shifted kind of since the recession. And now we may equate some places that are still kind of upscale and serving food at a high level as fine dining. But I think that that's kind of more of a, we've seen this kind of growth of fine casual food in the last decade. And fine dining there was predictions that it was going to come back, this sort of staid white tablecloth, very formal service. And I think COVID has sort of put what may be the final nail in the coffin of that kind of old school dining experience.
Oh, wow. Have you heard from any restaurateurs about how fine dining establishments are doing? Or are you aware of any that have opened back up?
Yeah, so there's a really interesting case in Birmingham. There's a place called Pernoy, and Pernoy was opened by two of the most well-known chefs in Michigan dining of the last 30 years, Luciano Del Signore of Bacco Restaurant in Southfield, and Takashi Yagahashi, who was on board early on. And Takashi is known here for Tribute, which was sort of one of the pinnacles of fine dining in Detroit history, or in Metro Detroit history, period. And they teamed up late last year to open up Pernoy, which was supposed to be the super high end. They were going for, basically like a 3 Michelin star experience, white tablecloths. I mean, you had food that was served at the exact same time, for a table of multiple diners, just kind of everything that you think of the classic fine dining experience. They even initially started off by requiring jackets for men in the dining room, which is sort of a really old school approach.
Wow.
Yeah. And so it's been really interesting to watch Pernoy shift, because that jacket requirement was actually dropped pretty early on, well before COVID. So I think, that was an early indicator of how, how the general population feels about these old school sort of rituals. And then, Takashi ended up leaving, actually. It just wasn't working out. He actually lives in Chicago and has multiple fast casual concepts in Chicago. Then COVID hit and they switched to carryout, and, caviar and blinis don't necessarily translate well to carry out packaging. And so they switched the concept to be this trattoria style. So kind of red sauce Italian classics almost, like things that your Italian grandmother would cook for you.
Yeah.
Veal parm and whatnot. And that did very well for them, when dining rooms were shut down across the state. And so they stuck with it when they reopened. Instead of going back to this super high-end experience, they're now, it's now Casa Pernoy, which, it's basically home-style Italian. I mean, it's still very much upscale, and it's, you can drop a penny there without trying too hard, but it's certainly not near the level of what it was before. And so, that's kind of a very potent example of the casualization of a place that was really trying to kind of bring back this classic fine dining experience that's now just completely pivoted to kind of adapt to the new realities.
What do you think people want from fine dining other than gourmet food? I feel like the experiences that I've had in, were like occasion moments where, it was a moment for celebration, maybe for family. But what else do you see? What else do you see people turning to fine dining for? And is that need still alive?
Yeah, I mean, this is where things get really interesting, because to me, a fine dining meal, what it really provides is escape, right? Or a suspension of reality, where you kind of just forget about all your troubles, and you're doted on hand and foot for every small little need that you have, And I think that that's where the real challenge for fine dining lies going forward, is how do you suspend reality? How do you provide a form of escape when your staff have to be wearing PPE and are limiting their interactions? I mean, it's a constant sort of reminder, you know, even seeing a server in a face mask is a sort of constant reminder of the pandemic that's raging outside those doors. Or, you know, I guess the challenge is that it may be inside the doors too, and we can't see it.
And it feels like health officials would say that that level of mindfulness is necessary right now. You know, I don't know that this is something that has been formally, you know, said in terms of dining, but that we all kind of have to be more aware of our surroundings than we used to be to stay safe.
Right. And, you know, the other thing with fine dining is it really requires a lot of labor. So a lot of people in a small confined area, right? I mean, for some of these places, you're talking about three servers just in the front of house that are taking care of each guest. You know, you have sort of your waiter, your back waiter. Sometimes you have like a captain, a service captain, typically multiple touches at the table, multiple people taking care of you. And if we're talking about limiting, you know, the way that we interact with one another and limiting the amount of people that we interact with, there's just no reality that sort of old school fine dining can work with this pandemic.
Yeah. So as you've been thinking this through, what do you think fine dining as we know it look like in this current moment, assuming that some restaurants are able to stay open with physical distancing? What could fine dining look like right now?
Yeah. I mean, I think that there are some benefits that the model does offer operators, namely an ability to control costs. So, you know, if you know that you are serving, you know, 50 prefix menus and it's just what is on the menu is what you're serving, and you maybe you take payment in advance, like a lot of those sort of higher end restaurants have been doing, where you pay for your entire meal up front, almost like a concert ticket. You know, the operator knows that they have 50 reservations that night and everybody is having the same menu, so they can really plan for the amount of food that they need. So there's less waste in that regard. And then they can, you know, really have control of their numbers. Whereas if you have 50 reservations in a more casual environment, you don't know what they're going to order, how many things. It's, you know, things get wasted, things have to get used up. So there's a level of control that fine dining offers, which I think we may see more restaurants that were sort of in this fine casual mode that maybe even didn't take reservations. You know, they were walk-in only because they're so busy. Switching to more of this sort of prefix or a more predictable sort of menu where you can book your experience in advance or at least have a reservation. I guess it also does help that, you know, communal tables are not really a thing at fine dining establishments. Shared plates are not really a thing at fine dining establishments. You know, is it possible that there is a future for fine dining? Sure. I mean, I don't think it's going to go away completely, but it's going to be more of a struggle to really give that sort of escapist environment, right? That escapist experience. And I think that the X factor is how comfortable are people going to be, the general public going to be wanting to go to a place and sit for 3 hours or 4 hours for this long multi-course meal in an enclosed environment. So many challenges, and, you know, just in this one sort of niche in restaurants. But I mean, those challenges, it doesn't matter what kind of restaurant you are, you know, you're challenged right now.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about the future of fine dining in Michigan during the COVID era with Detroit Free Press restaurant critic Mark Kurlianchik. What are the risks for the frontline workers who go back to work in fine dining? Do you see them as being essentially different than what other restaurant workers are dealing with right now?
I wouldn't say not essentially. I mean, the restaurant industry as a whole generally does a pretty poor job of taking care of its frontline workers, and that, you know, your pay range in the front of house in a fine dining establishment is certainly a little bit higher than it would be elsewhere. You know, you can make $60,000, $70,000, $80,000, upwards of $100,000 as a server in some very high end fine dining restaurants. At 50% capacity, you're going to see those, you know, folks who are maybe supporting a full family on a salary like that, you know, not be able to do that anymore. So I think staffing is going to be a big issue. Do I think that the challenges necessarily are different, that safety challenges are different? Not necessarily, because you're still serving the public and you just as a server or somebody working in the front of house of, at a restaurant, there's no way that you can vet every single person that walks through your door. You know, even if they make the reservations in advance, you just don't know what those people are doing. The safety issue is an issue that doesn't matter what type of restaurant you're in, you're going to be exposed to at some level to a form of risk, because there's going to be people that once they're seated at your table can take their masks off and are now breathing the same air as you.
You know, Mark, a listener pointed out to us that there have been a couple of social media posts from Michigan restaurants that sort of wink at their customer base, saying, if you are not wearing masks, we'll assume that you're medically unable. Have you heard anything from restaurant owners about, you know, I don't know if they'd be very forthcoming if they were playing it fast and loose with the rules, but aren't there legal requirements now under Governor Whitmer's orders that masks aren't really optional?
Well, yes, there are, but there is still the caveat that, you know, you cannot wear a mask for certain medical conditions. And because of HIPAA laws and privacy thing, you know, it's very hard as a business owner, it doesn't matter what type of business you have, to be able to determine whether that person who is not wearing a mask or refusing to wear a mask actually has a medical condition or not. So the climate right now in restaurants is not like anything I've ever seen before. And I mean, it's not just restaurants, it's in all businesses, but just the tension, the unease, I mean, the all the additional stressors that are being placed on, you know, operators, frontline employees, back of house employees, you know, now as an owner, as a manager at a restaurant, you are now a contact tracer. You are now, you know, sort of a physician because you're running health checks on your staff. Mm. It's just all these additional things that we're asking of restaurants who, you know, generally already have to do a lot of sanitary things. But now there's all these new sort of tensions that can touch points with customers that can fall on one end or another of the spectrum on mask wearing, you know, and so much of it is politicized that it's just, you know, we even have reports of some restaurants choosing to shut down rather than be, you know, mask enforcers. There's a place in Dearborn Heights, a Mexican restaurant, that they were open for 2 weeks. And after 2 weeks said, you know what, enough of this. Until this is over, we're not opening because we cannot, you know, this is just too much to ask of our staff and too much for us to handle.
I saw that post. It said that staff members had been treated rudely on a number of occasions and they just weren't going to do it. They weren't going to put their staff in that policing position. It sounds like we're in a place where there isn't a real obvious mechanism for enforcement.
Well, that's the issue. I mean, you know, a lot of this has been self-policing, right? And the enforcement has been lax. I mean, a lot of this enforcement actually doesn't fall on the local health departments, you know, for mask wearing and PPE and such. It falls on my OSHA. And my OSHA, you know, has, I don't know, I actually don't know the number and I don't want to quote it because I don't want to be wrong, but very few folks dedicated to enforcement, particularly in restaurants, you know, of the thousands of restaurants in the state of Michigan, there may just be a handful of my OSHA folks doing, you know, who are tasked with certainly enforcement. I mean, there have been threats as well from Attorney General Dana Nessel to revoke liquor license laws if there are businesses or restaurants or bars that are shown as not taking these guidelines seriously. But to date, I don't know of a single establishment that's gotten its liquor license revoked, you know, for that reason.
This is just a lot. Have you heard about many fine dining restaurants that have just said, that's it, we're closing our doors permanently?
You know, not yet. I think there's still a bit of a wait and see. I know it's hard to believe that, you know, basically the fifth month into this pandemic, we're still taking a wait and see approach. But there's still so much uncertainty that and a lot of places have been slow to reopen. So I have not heard of any place saying, no, you know, we're just not going to open. You know, Pernoy was one that they, instead of reopening in their former self, they sort of, you know, remodeled to fit this new reality. But I think we'll see over the next few months, particularly as cases spike and there's the threat of another shutdown, we'll see some more permanent, you know, decisions on the part of restaurants in general. I think up to this point, the PPP loans have maybe helped keep some of the places, keep their doors open. But there's also plenty of folks that just haven't reopened yet. And I think that, you know, many of them would probably like to go as quietly as they possibly can. And, you know, the sad thing is that a lot of this is by no doing of their own. It's just, you know, it's a business model that needs to be adjusted for this new reality.
Mark Kurlianchik is restaurant critic for the Detroit Free Press. Mark, thanks so much for your work, and please do stay safe.
Thank you so much, April.
This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. If you were a restaurant owner, what would you do right now? Would you take your chances with table service? Maybe try to pivot into something doable and distanced? It seems like the ground is shifting beneath business owners' feet every day. Eve Aronoff Fernandez is a restaurateur extraordinaire. She is currently the owner and chef at Frida Batidos, the fast casual Cuban phenom with locations in Ann Arbor and Detroit. But she's had all kinds of roles in the industry. She ran the upscale eatery Eve, was a contestant on Top Chef, attended Le Cordon Bleu in Paris. Once she even sold hot dogs at Fenway Park. And she is actually expanding Frida Batidos during the pandemic. Eve Aronoff Fernandez, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you so much.
Hey, for those who haven't had the pleasure, can you describe what the atmosphere is normally like, I guess, before COVID-19?
Like, one of the things that's most important to us is to kind of foster the spirit of conviviality. It's a tenet from the slow food movement, and it's something that just means a lot to us, just to welcome people to sit together and just enjoy themselves around food. So it's usually just like a really warm, convivial, bustling environment.
What services is Frida offering right now? There's carryout for sure, and also patio service, right?
There's carryout, delivery, which is new for us, and then the patio service, which has been expanded. So we're fortunately have a larger patio space.
You've expanded Frida Batidos into the space next door, which was previously occupied by the restaurant Logan, which sadly closed last month.
Yeah.
What went into your decision to take this on? That sounds like it might feel pretty risky right now.
It just was an opportunity that came up, and it was very bittersweet, like as you mentioned, with our neighbors closing. But we've needed space for a long time, and you know, we've never had a door to the back alley. We've never had some basic things that most restaurants have, just for deliveries and things like that. And now it just seems so much more important because of the need for social, like, distancing. So we felt like we just kind of had to make it work and just figure out how to make it work.
Socially distant dining options.
Yes. Because right now the dining room still isn't open at Frida because we just didn't feel comfortable with it, with our space.
It seems like restaurateurs are having to juggle so many things as they decide how far to go in reopening, like what price points will work. What has it been like making these decisions about what to move forward on and what's going to have to wait?
Well, we've just kind of tried to just kind of have the benefits of what restaurant life already prepares you for. Just like no matter how prepared you are, no matter how organized, there are going to be surprises that come up. So just really like staying calm and focused. You kind of have to learn how to stay calm under duress anyway. So just trying to like use those things and just brainstorm together as a group. We have an amazing group of staff and managers that we've worked together with for almost 16 years. So just really like trying to talk through things together and have regular meetings with the staff at a safe distance so we can make good decisions together.
You've had, as I mentioned, so many different kinds of experiences in the industry. What do you see as the biggest challenges facing service industry right now?
I mean, I think just balancing the need to like, you know, you need and want to stay in business, but you also, it's important in a different level to keep the staff safe, and the staff is generally in a restaurant like family, and then the community, you know, we care so much about the community. So keeping the guests that come in safe while you keep the business as strong as humanly possible. So just balancing those things.
Is there anything that you've learned from either the successes or the less successful things that have happened in the various businesses that you've started that's particularly useful right now?
I mean, for me, I think the thing that's been the most helpful is just kind of working together and communicating as a community within the restaurant. You know, when I started, I kind of just felt like I needed to make every decision myself and just, you know, I'm so involved in every aspect, but really like listening to each other and figuring things out, because you know, somebody else will inevitably have thought of something you haven't thought of. So just brainstorming as a group has like really gotten us through this. And right. It's just very different from where the way I have approached things when I started.
You know, I wonder if the challenges, you know, facing any restaurant depend on the business models. Having seen this from a couple different levels, how do you see challenges being different right now for, say, a white tablecloth fine dining business compared with someplace more casual?
Well, a lot of it is about space now, you know, and just how many people can safely fit in the space, you know, and be comfortable and you know, make sure that all comes together to work. So we, you know, thought about all the different options when the Logan space became available. Should we make that Eve? Should we open up as a pop-up for Eve? That was our first restaurant for 6 months. And it's, you know, every restaurant, every business has to take different things into account. But, you know, there's obviously like a higher ticket average for a more formal restaurant, but fewer guests, you know, per service period. So it's really just like balancing those things out. And for us, it was a really amazing opportunity to have the Logan space so we could continue with Frida, you know, in a way that felt safe and comfortable for everybody.
Eve Aronoff Fernandez is the proprietor of Frida Batidos with locations in Ann Arbor and Detroit. Eve, it's a real pleasure talking to you. We hope you and your team can stay safe and hopefully open.
Thank you kindly. Appreciate it.